Hello and welcome to another episode of the Sal Licata Show podcast, available on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcasts. Please download, rate, subscribe, like. I believe it helps us out. But if you don't like the show, then you don't have to do any of that stuff. Let's get right into it as we begin here on this Tuesday following the Super Bowl, looking ahead now to spring training, to the baseball season, which is, for me, my most favorite season of the year. I mean, I love football, don't get me wrong. Love September, love the postseason, all that, but the excitement of spring training, knowing that you have your team for 162 games, God, the majority of nights, there's nothing better than that. I remember being obsessed with the magnetic schedules, throwing them up on the fridge, and knowing that every night you got a game to look forward to. And between both the Mets and Yankees, obviously, we should be covered throughout the course, you know, of the spring and on into the summer, all the way from April to September and hopefully on through October with both these teams, which should be the expectations. And you know, we start with the Yankees, who are running it back, even though they say they're not running it back. I don't know how Brian Cashman can look at us with a straight face and say, we're not running it back. It's not the same exact team. When if you actually look at it, it is the same exact team. It's the exact same team. Ryan Weathers is the only difference. Everything else is the exact same thing. Now, is that a bad thing? Not necessarily, because the Yankees were good last year. You know, I think there's this thought, if you knock the Yankees or any team, but in this particular case, the Yankees, if you knock the Yankees, you don't think that they're good enough. Well, okay, there are, you know, various degrees to that conversation. They were very good a year ago, winning 94 games, and they'll let you know about that. They believe in their team. That's why they're running it back, even though they say that they aren't. All right, we're not running it back. You know, let's bring back Paul Goldschmidt. Like everybody else, they bring back the exact same guys. Cashman says they're not running it back. Anyway. They won 94 games a year ago. Okay, was it good enough to win the division? It wasn't. Was it good enough to win the postseason? It wasn't. But they believe that the team that they acquired or assembled after the deadline is going to be a team that's going to be better than what they had the majority of last year. And hard to argue against that when you look at the landscape of the American League, because I do believe the Yankees can be one of the best teams in baseball and certainly in the American League. Maybe even better than Toronto. I mean, Toronto did add Dylan Cease, but they lose Bo Bichette. Are they definitively better? And who knows? After getting to the World Series last year, are they going to perform the way that they did up and down that lineup a year ago? Maybe. I mean, the way that they won would make me think that it's more sustainable and different than the Yankees. But I also thought that the Yankees were going to crush them a year ago, and it didn't happen. So do I think that the Yankees could crush them this year? Maybe. I mean, we'll see. My biggest issue is not even with the Yankees just running it back, because I think that sometimes it's okay to run it back. If you believe you have a good group and saying, you know what, well, last year we lost because of this or that, and this year we're getting healthier, and this year we have the full group together. Like Boone said that many times. He told BT and I at the live show, and I'm pretty sure he said it everywhere else, you know, either after the fact or before the fact, that he thought going in to that postseason, that was the best group that he's had to work with, including the team that got to the World Series the year before. So you're talking about from 2018 on, those Yankee teams, Boone believed in last year's team. They were healthy. You know, they had the talent. They had versatile pieces, different matchups. He felt that was their best shot that they've had. And it just didn't work out for him. And their words saying ran into a buzzsaw with the Blue Jays. And they're going to bet that that's not going to happen again with Toronto. Give us another crack at the Blue Jays. We'll be better. Return of Gerrit Cole, full season of the other guys we mentioned before. Okay, great. My issue is that why wouldn't you want to, okay, say we have a good team and a good base and we can run it back, but also make the team better, definitively better going in? What would be the harm in trying to improve the ball club? I used this example many times before and I'll do it again. If the Dodgers can win back-to-back World Series, which they did, back-to-back World Series champs, and in the offseason not sit there and say, you know, we're good. I mean, we won two World Series. They're not saying we won 94 games and we got unlucky in the postseason. We ran into a buzzsaw. They're saying, you know what? We won two World Series, but we're going to go out there and get the best free agent outfielder and the best free agent closer. So if they could do that, why would the New York Yankees just say, 94 games, our odds are as good as anybody else. We're good with this. We're good with McMahon at third instead of going after Bo Bichette. You know, the Mets had to make changes. We'll get to the Mets in a second. But the Mets had to make changes because they weren't good enough. But even if they were better than they were a year ago, they still would have made changes. That's what you're supposed to do. Try, especially when you're talking about the New York market or the top high-end markets, you get the idea is to get better. Yeah, okay, maybe we were a little unlucky last year from a Yankees perspective. Maybe we were a little unlucky, but we want to make sure that we're better than where we were a year ago. The goal should be to improve each year. That's where I don't understand what the Yankees are doing. And when you look at their lineup, it's the exact same thing. Judge in right, Grisham in center, Bellinger in left, Stanton at DH, Rice slash Goldschmidt at first, Jazz at second, shortstop's going to be Volpe eventually, but it's Caballero to start, third base is McMahon, Wells is catching. It's the same exact thing. The rotation banged up for the first month of the season, but ultimately the same thing. And the rotation, I think, is going to be very good. And you can say, well, Cole's coming back. Okay. Well, you're going to factor in Cole coming back, which is great. But then what happens if somebody else gets hurt? What? It's going to be perfect? Like, the idea I hate, I despise when teams do this. The idea that what happened last year is going to happen again this year, just with the addition of other stuff, makes no sense whatsoever. It was a thought process from some Mets fans from 2024 to 2025, where, okay, well, they made the NLCS a year ago, and look at all that had to go right for them to do that. Now they add Juan Soto, they should go to the World Series. You do the math. They were good enough to get to the NLCS. Now they just added one of the best players possible in the sport, and they should go to the World Series. Well, it doesn't work like that. Obviously, the Mets missed the postseason. Because from year to year, you have no idea what you're going to get. So you can't just say, well, the Yankees are going to do exactly what they did a year ago, and now add Gerrit Cole on top of it. No, it doesn't work like that. And I'm sure the Yankees will add in season at the deadline. Brian Cashman's always aggressive, so I'm not worried about that. And I do believe that going in, they're one of the few teams that could actually compete with the Dodgers and win a World Series and be a top team in the American League. No question about it. And you know what? If I had to bet on it, even though I saw what I saw last year, I'd bet that the Yankees would be better than the Blue Jays, whether it's winning the division, getting them in the postseason. Something about Toronto's game I just don't trust is sustainable. I need to see them do it again before I just say, you know what, they're going to be better. Because the Yankees are scary with their lineup. Best lineup in baseball last year. Even better than the Dodgers. Look at the numbers. So I do believe in it to a certain extent. I just don't know why they wouldn't want to go over the top. Even something as simple as Edwin Diaz. Why in the world would the Yankees have not have been in on Edwin Diaz last year? That makes no sense to me. Or Bo Bichette. Why in the world would the... Like, there were reports of the Yankees inquired about it, but what, they don't... Can they not afford it? Do they not want to get involved in that? Other teams are making big moves, the high AAV, whatever it may be, and the Yankees are just like, man, look at what McMahon... And his being a strikeout machine. Will he improve? Probably, because you can't be any worse offensively, but is he as good as Bo Bichette? No. Jazz Chisholm, same thing. Okay, puts up gaudy numbers, too many empty at-bats. Like, the Yankees are just content with doubling down on guys and running it back again. Now, two more things as it pertains to the Yankees. One, I remember having this conversation with A-Rod. I don't know if it was when he was on with BT and I on The Fan or if it was at his holiday party. But he was talking about how he does believe in, while he doesn't believe in the Yankees, you know, theory and the analytics and all those different things, he does believe in running it back with the same group for the most part, not to the T, maybe like the Yankees have done, but running it back, referencing that 09 team that ended up winning it all, although that wasn't really running it back because they, you know, they went out there that year and added a bunch of different guys, but keeping guys intact, saying, okay, well, you don't want to just break it up just to break it up. If you're in the postseason every year, you know, sometimes it takes a break to go your way or something like that to break through. So the Yankees, you know, don't want to take a blowtorch to the core with a 94-win team that's always in the postseason, but that's different from what I'm saying. I'm saying add on top of that. The idea is to improve, not to just stay the same. But there is, to A-Rod's point, there is something to be said about, okay, keeping it with Judge and Bellinger and Grisham and Raul, you know, keep that group, that core intact, and Stanton, I guess, keep that group intact. And the more, you know, more chances you have to get in the postseason, maybe one of those times you'll break through. So we'll see. The other thing, and I can't even believe that I have to discuss this, but just it just shows you how stupid people are. Goldschmidt coming back.
Oh. Oh, but what about Ben Rice? Ben Rice needs at bats. Why would you bring back Goldschmidt?
Guys, Ben Rice is not going to lose playing time to Paul Goldschmidt. Goldschmidt's there to be a right-handed bat, veteran presence, defensive guy. Like, it's a nice compliment to Ben Rice. The Yankees are very high on Ben Rice, as they should be. I would expect his bat to be in the lineup as much as humanly possible. Maybe not every single day, his bat will be in the lineup. And I would think against lefties as well. Maybe not all the time, maybe not to start. We'll see how that works out. He's not taking at bats away from Ben Rice. He's not going to stunt the development of Ben Rice. Good God. Come on, guys. Like, pay attention here. People freak out about the stupidest crap. Oh, MJ Melendez for the Mets. Oh, it's a good deal. It's a two-way deal. Who cares? It's a minor league deal. Guy probably won't even be on the roster when push comes to shove at the end of the year. If the Mets do make the postseason, he won't be there. Like, relax. These moves that fans get worked up about, these insignificant moves, Paul Goldschmidt is basically insignificant. He's going to be a part-time player at best with the Yankees. Usually they'll have him in there against a lefty, mash a lefty. I mean, I don't know if Rice is going to DH, where they'd figure out Rice in there. I'd like to see Rice get some lefty on lefty at bats so he's prepared. I don't think that that's going to be the case, so they're going to take Rice and just put him on the bench every single time a lefty's in there or always pinch hit for him against lefty. The sport is matchup-based now. You know that. That's part of the game. But Paul Goldschmidt being back is not going to impact Ben Rice and his development at first base. I told you, Aaron Boone said to me he believes Ben Rice is going to have a higher OPS than Pete Alonso. That just shows you how much they believe in Ben Rice. And after watching him outside of the postseason, after watching him last year, hard to argue against that. Rice looked like a beast. All right, to the Mets. My one concern with the Mets going into the season, and oddly, I don't have many concerns. You know, similar with the Yankees, we grade them on a curve, right? The knock with the Yankees is not, well, they're not good enough. The knock is, well, why didn't they try to get significantly better like the Dodgers did? But the Yankees are no doubt one of the best teams in baseball, and everybody knows they're going to make the postseason. They do every year. The Mets needed to make big changes because their team stunk a year ago. They had to take a blowtorch to the core, and they did that. One of the reasons, and I think they got definitively better. And one of the reasons that, or I should say that, my main concern about the team, one of the reasons why I don't have many concerns is I like what they did, whether it's the depth in the lineup, whether it's the defensive improvement, the well-rounded baseball players that they have in compared to what they used to have, and obviously the starting rotation. Like, there are all reasons why I think the Mets are going to be far better than what they were a year ago. Maybe the chemistry improved as well. So I don't really have many concerns, oddly enough, going into the year. Now, first week of April, these guys aren't performing. Different story. I'll be on them just like anybody else would be. But going in, I don't have many concerns outside of the outfield. And even that, even with the outfield being the way that it is, I kind of like the mix and like the way that they built it. But if you paint worst case scenario for the Mets, you're talking about, you know, Soto's going to do what Soto does. We know that. But worst case scenario in the other two spots would be Luis Robert Jr. doing what he's done the last couple of years, which, by the way, if he does that, it's still far better than what the Mets had a year ago and a significant upgrade over anything they've had in center field for quite some time. I joked around about the 190 thing yesterday, but his floor is basically 220, 15 homers, 20 steals. If he does that and plays gold glove defense, that's a significant upgrade. But the point is, he could be a high-end guy or he could be a bust. What if he gets hurt? You know, the floor, if he stays healthy, are those numbers. What if Robert gets hurt and can't play, you know, he plays 70 games? That's an issue. Who's the backup? Tyrone Taylor, that's not good enough. And now you couple worst-case scenario with Luis Robert Jr., couple that with Carson Benj in left field, and again, love the upside there. I love that the Mets have built the team so that Benj has a clear runway. There is no roadblock. I wanted a little more insurance than Beatty, Tyrone Taylor, and Melendez. But if you do that, now you got to get the guy playing time. Like, who's going to sign here and say, well, I'm only going to be a backup, or in case this guy doesn't cut it, then I'll get some playing time. Guys want more guaranteed playing time. So where's the insurance policy? Where's the legitimate left fielder that you're going to get that's not going to be a roadblock for Carson Benj? So the Mets are in a spot where they're saying, we're betting, we're counting on Carson Benge to be that guy, which I respect. I like it. You have to make room for the young guys to grow. So he's going to have an opportunity, a great opportunity to win the job, maybe even more so to lose the job. It's his job going in. So Benge can only lose the job in spring training. If he does and cannot perform and take that job by the horns or by the reins or whatever, now the Mets have an issue. Because now you could be looking at worst case scenario for Luis Robert Jr. And let's say worst case is he's hurt. Now you move Tyrod Taylor over. And now in Tyrone Taylor. And now you move to left field and you have Beatty and Melendez. And that's just not good enough. And that's an ugly scenario for a team that's trying to go win a division and go win their first World Series in 40 freaking years. So that's my biggest area of concern. People can pick apart the bullpen. I think the bullpen's actually deep. You talk about Williams, Weaver, Rayleigh, AJ Minter eventually coming back sooner than later. Those are four. I always used to talk about the triangle of trust in the bullpen. Now it's got to be a square with how often the bullpens are used. So you get those four guys. It's not a bad square right there with Williams, assuming he can bounce back, and I think he will. Weaver, solid. Rayleigh, solid. Minter, solid. Proven guys. And if not, they'll have to improve the bullpen. That shouldn't be that hard to do in season. Those things are fickle. Guys will come out of nowhere and have a good season, give you a good season, and get some big outs. So I'm less concerned about the bullpen. I'm not concerned about the starting rotation because I trust Freddy Peralta. I think McClain should be pretty good. And then of the guys behind those guys, Holmes you could pencil in and trust to do what he did a year ago. You hope that he could give you a little bit more length in these games, but he should be solid to a point where you could trust him. So I think they have three kind of known commodities, Peralta, Holmes, and McClain, maybe less of a known commodity because he's only done 8 starts. But, I mean, it was a pretty impressive 8 starts. So that should be a solid three, which means you don't need Manaea to be an ace. You don't need Senga to be an ace. You don't need Peterson to be an all-star. What you need is maybe one of those three guys to have a plus season, and now all of a sudden you got a really good rotation with some depth. So I think their starting rotation going in going to be way better. Bullpen, no big issues with it, and it's easy to fix in season, or should be in theory. And I think the lineup is better balanced than it was a year ago with horses at the top that you know are going to hit, Lindor, Soto, Bichette. Polanco should be okay. The rest of the lineup, a bunch of guys that step into the batter's box and are a threat to hit 20 home runs every single time that they get in the box or hit a home run, a threat to hit a home run when they step in the box, and guys with the potential to hit 20 home runs in a year, which is what they've done. Length throughout that lineup. Also guys that put the bat on the ball that could run the bases. So I like everything, just mildly concerned going in about the outfield in the event that Robert gets hurt or his worst case scenario and Benge doesn't cut it. Then they're going to need to get an outfielder because I don't think that they can sustain that throughout the course of a full year with Taylor and Beatty and Melendez being two of the three integral pieces in the outfield. All right, fun to talk some baseball here as we, you know, like we said, start to move on from football season, although whatever the offseason brings, we will get into. We'll do some fun stuff with Jets and Giants along the way as well. Maybe some roundtable discussions about the direction where those teams are at. You know, we'll get into some NBAs. The Knicks continue to go, all that stuff. But really now it's going to be baseball front and center. Let's debut a new segment here that we're going to do on Tuesdays as Bada Booms came up with the idea, Tired or Wired. Bada Booms, the debut episode of Tired or Wired. What do you have for us today?
Would you like to explain it, or I can explain it?
You look tired. You can explain it.
No, I'm not.
Are you tired or wired yourself?
I think I'm wired. Listening to you talk about baseball always gets me a little wired.
Mm. What gets the juices flowing? We got juice. Yeah. We're warming up. Right. We're warming up here. All right. So you want to explain it? Go ahead. Explain it.
So basically, the way this works is I'm going to give you some statements. This being the very first episode, it's going to be blanketed, I'll say. So, you know, baseline segments, arguments that have been happening in New York over the course of the last year. I have two New York sports related, one blanket sports in general topic, and one pop culture, if you will.
Okay, I like it. There we go. Let's see what you got for us. This is where you do the work. This is your opportunity. Don't screw it up. Go ahead.
All right, sounds good. I'll take it and run with it like I have already. So the first Tired or Wired, Sal Licata, Juan Soto regrets his decision of Queens over the Bronx. Tired or wired?
Oh, come on. You couldn't be more tired than that. I thought it was a tired narrative a year ago, although there was legitimate, I don't want to say that there was regret. I think Soto was trying to adjust. He made a major decision. I do think he enjoyed being a Yankee. Certainly loved playing with Aaron Judge, loved playing under Aaron Boone, loved his time with the Yankee fans in the Bronx. But he felt the opportunity with the Mets was better, more money, the family thing, all those things, where he was adjusting to it last year. And maybe there was some, I think anytime you transition with a move that significant, there's going to be maybe some, I don't even want to say second thought because I think that that's strong, but maybe missing the place where you were before a little bit. I think that that's normal, but I thought it was tired a year ago. I certainly think it's tired by now.
All right. I don't hate that at all.
What about you?
I was going to rile you up a little bit. Oh, you're asking me?
Well,
I think it's a little bit wired, Sal. He loves posting pictures of him and Aaron Judge.
Get the hell out of here. I know he did something recently, too, with Judge. Talking about, all right, he likes Judge. I mean, whatever. It is what it is.
That's a tough one because I think you can make a case for it being in the middle. Like, I think you can say there is a little bit of regret there.
Well, no, but the segment's tired or wired. There is
exactly.
No tired.
That's why you're the one who answers and not me.
There is no tired, wired, sleepy, or whatever you want to say. Like, I don't know what the middle. What would the middle be between tired and wired?
Juiced?
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, all right, number two, what do you got for us?
So
I
as
feel like I've had this segment before, but no, this is the first one. Go ahead.
The recent success of the New York Knicks, a lot of people like to claim now that New York City is a basketball town, Sal. Is that tired or wired?
That is also tired. I think that's a very good question because I've heard that before. Matter of fact, I think I've had that discussion with BT. He would always say that even before I was together with him, saying that it's a basketball town. You know, he gets more into the St. John's and all that stuff, which is included along with the Knicks. I think New York loves basketball. I mean, we're a sports town, obviously. We love football as well. But New York, as I've known it, and continue to know it, has always been a baseball town, dating back to the Dodgers, Giants, Yankees. Like, that's where it's been a baseball town primarily, where you had those three teams in it. And then even when the Giants and Dodgers bolted for Los Angeles and San Francisco, respectively, or California, whatever, you know, bringing in the Mets back into the equation. It's always, to me, been a baseball town. It doesn't mean that we don't love basketball just as much in some cases, or love football just as much. But the idea, you're right. New York has never been associated with being a football town. It's usually a baseball town or a basketball town. But I would say that there's no question about it. It is a baseball town first. Even if the Knicks, you know, when they were great in the 90s, same thing. Baseball town. It always was, and I believe that it always will be a baseball town first. So I think that that's tired.
I would just like to add on to your point there about the baseball thing. I think a lot of that is derivative of when the football teams came here, where were they playing?
Well, Yankee Stadium. And
they
Chase
were playing
Stadium.
In baseball stadiums. Yeah. Yeah. So it all revolves around that. But I like that answer there, Sal. Last sports-related one, then we'll go to a kind of random.
Oh, I like it. So you got four for us.
Yeah,
four tied like award. I like that. Yes, go ahead.
Thank you, Sal. The third one is not New York sports-related, but the question is, or what's the phrase I should say, sports gambling has ruined the way people talk about sports. Sal, tired or wired?
I would say, I don't know if I would say that it's the way that they talk about sports, but I would say that it's wired in that it definitely has changed the way that people consume the games. I'll give you an example. So this Sunday, Super Bowl Sunday, I wanted to get into, I was in the mood, Super Bowl Sunday, whatever, getting excited about it. Knicks on at 12:30. I did my first, I don't even know if I've done this ever, but certainly this year, my first Knicks bet with like props. Normally I'll bet the Knicks, I just bet the Knicks straight up or bet the Knicks in a series, whatever it may be. But I bet Jalen Brunson, big bounce back game for him after what happened in Detroit. So I bet Brunson to have four or more three-pointers and to score 29 or more points. Plus, I parlayed that with the Knicks just to win the game. And when you do that, now I loved it. And Brunson's still in the game, and the Knicks had a big lead late. And I was hanging on. I'm like, oh, God. He got hot. He needed two threes in the fourth quarter. Hit one. Now he needs just one more, and I'm going to go over both and win. And it was actually the last shot that he took. Drains the three. Knicks go up a bunch. Timeout. Brunson doesn't see the floor again. But when he hit that three with like 4 minutes to go in the game, even though the Knicks are up 18, I legit jumped off the couch and screamed, scared the crap out of my daughter. If I didn't have that bet, I would not have had that reaction. And it skews the way that you're watching the game. Instead of just watching it from a Knicks perspective throughout the entire game, I'm wanting to see Brunson shoot more threes, right? It's just a natural thing. If I need him to make four threes, my instinct is watching that game saying, okay, well, yeah, that was a great pass to the guy who was cutting to the basket. Great move. Or DeWara, oh, that's nice defense or whatever. But I'm, or you know, good job with the offense. They're shooting three yourself. But I want to see Brunson shoot as many threes as possible because I want to get that bet. So gambling, while it may not have been always legal, it was mostly pick a side, right? Total or a side, which doesn't really change the way you watch a game. You're just rooting for one team. That's how sports fans watch the game. You're rooting for a team. With the way that it's evolved here and all these props and player props and same game parlays, I don't think there's any question about it. And fantasy as well. I can remember watching a game one time where I needed Brian Westbrook of the Eagles. Just I had him in fantasy, and I needed the points. So even though the Eagles were getting smoked, they kept dumping it off to him. 1 point, 1 point, one, every reception, 1 point. And I was just rooting for that. It skews the way I've watched the game. So I don't think it's anything new. I don't think it's gambling companies' fault. I just think that since fantasy and now with the same game props and player props, I definitely think it skews the way that you watch a game. Yes. Wired.
So you would say that's wired. Okay. Wired. Perfect. So yeah. Right now you got two tireds and one wired so
you
far.
You have anything to add on that? Like, does it skew the way you watch a game if fantasy-wise or anything? You have nothing to add? Or
I do have something to add real quick. You and Baldy, Brian Baldy, you guys have a great take that you both use a lot, and I don't know if you got it from him, but the sake of with fantasy and all that becoming huge and having its rise, NFL fans kind of look at the game differently where you have to have these – you have to draft receivers early. You have to draft these high-skill guys, running backs. And that's not how the game of football – that's not how a team is created in football. Like, normally those skill players are the last add. You start on the inside and work your way out.
Yeah, inside out.
I always
out.
Like
no,
that
I've,
take
I've,
a lot.
Yeah, inside out. I've been saying that for years, so I'm glad Baldy says it because it brings some merit to what I was saying. I don't know where I learned that exactly, but – years ago, I always said the same thing. You want to build your team. Everybody gets caught up on the fantasy stuff. No, build, like, that's why I liked what the Jets were doing, trying to build the team inside out. Don't get caught up. You know, when they took, instead of taking the tight end, they took Fashanu or whatever. Yeah. Build inside out. All right, go ahead. Well, last one here, tired or wired.
Yeah, so this is not sports related at all. It's pop culture related. I can break it down a little bit more if you want me to. The cinema is dead, Sal. Is that tired or wired?
That's tired, dude. You mean like going to the movies?
I think it's all encompassing of going to the movies, the movie watching experience, because a lot of it happens at home, and concept of, you know, new films. So it encompasses those two things. A lot of movies now are remakes, or, you know, they're playing onto thought processes that have already been seen, featured.
I'd be curious to get your take on this when I'm done as a 22-year-old perspective. I think that's tired. As much as I love sitting in my room watching movies on the big screen or whatever, like I enjoy that more than anything. Love it. But I still love going to the movies. It's a different experience. My issue is, you know, with our daughter, it's a pain in the neck. You have to get a babysitter. Now that's an extra expense. Is it worth it? Is that what you're going to do with the night out? Go watch a movie. So on rare occasions, my wife and I will go to the movies. I love taking my daughter to the movies. We saw Zootopia 2. We went maybe say three times in the last several months. So, but there's nothing like getting the ticket, going to the theater, getting the bucket of popcorn, and just escaping for a few hours. The last one I think we saw, my wife and we did get a babysitter, was Avatar, the new Avatar. And we loved it. It was great. So taking our daughter, going to the movies, I love it. As much as I love being home watching movies, and it's much easier that way, and I wish I had access to all the movies because I wouldn't have to go to the theater, I still love going to the theater, so I would say that that's tired. And I still think that they make good movies, maybe not as often as they used to, like a concept or new original, what do you call it, original screenplays. I just don't think it's as often, but they still make good ones.
I think there's a lot of, you asked for my opinion, so wait, actually, let's get your answer first. So cinema's dead, Sal, tired or wired?
Tired. Yeah, so I said it at the beginning.
Oh, I just wanted to hit at the end there so we can.
Tired.
So you
no, excuse me. Cinema's not dead. Yeah, the cinema dead take is tired.
Cinema's dead is tired. Yes. So you had three tireds, one wired there for our first edition of Tired or Wired.
Yeah.
And you asked for my perspective on it as a youth. I do want to say cinema is dead is a tired take because there's so much more now. It is a little bit harder to find. A lot of these kind of big, what's like corporate theaters, I guess that's the word, don't showcase, you know, these lower end, more independent level films. Like A24 is huge. They don't show a lot of the A24 in AMCs. I know that for a fact, for somebody who lives by an AMC. Are you a fan of any of the A24 movies, Sal?
I don't even know what that is, A24.
That's like Hereditary and I'm trying to think of another one. It's a very like cinematic format.
I feel like I've seen it come up before a movie. Does it pop up on the screen?
Yes, yeah, yeah. It's a production studio.
Yeah, okay, yeah. But I don't know what that means.
Yeah, but I don't think that cinema is dead necessarily. I think a lot of people who used to live on the cinema, like the only way to watch movies is going to the theater, people who built that into every single weekend that they had. It's not like that anymore. It's more of like going to a theme park now if you live in Florida.
The majority of the movies, though, that people consume, or at least me, and I would assume the majority of people as well, feel like it's at home. With Netflix now, like Netflix has so many Oscar nominee movies right on there. So that's one thing, not to mention all the other apps or services, whatever you want to call them, streaming services. Also, maybe going to the movies is not as appealing as it used to be because these movies come out sooner. It used to be, if a movie was in the theaters, you wouldn't be able to see that at home until it came out on VHS, you know, several months later.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's like, if it's out of the movies, boom, before you know it, you could get it right on your screen, even if you have to pay, you know, $15 or whatever it may be up there. So, all right.
Were you ever a big, and I know you're a little bit older than me, this is huge for my generation, were you ever a fan of, like, the Marvel movies, the Avengers movies and all that stuff?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, they got carried away, so I had to stop. But yes, of course, mm-hmm. I love those movies.
Just the last memory I have of, like, the movies being really hot was Endgame and all that stuff where,
yeah.
like, you had to buy the ticket as if it was a game, like, to go to AMC ahead of for time. Opening night.
That's wild. Still, but that still happens. That happened with Wicked, I'm pretty sure.
It's certain definitely going to happen with this next, when they come out with the Doctor Doom Avengers.
What's the last movie you've seen in the theaters?
I think it was this movie, I could be wrong, but I think it was this movie called Mickey 17 with Robert Pattinson, which was a while ago. Probably like 7 months ago.
You got to get to the movies, bro. I've seen The Naked Gun. I've seen Wicked 2. Avatar, Zootopia. I mean, I feel like I've seen...
You a big Wicked guy?
Loved Wicked.
Did you go with your daughter or your wife?
First saw the first one at home with my wife and her cousin. Then the next one I went with my wife, no daughter.
Oh, really? So she's not into that or she's still too young?
She is a little bit into it now. Not enough to sit through 2.5. Like, we couldn't even finish the first one yet. We're halfway through.
It doesn't
through.
Scare her? Because when I was little, I was terrified
Maybe
of
a little
Wicked
bit.
Witch.
Oh yeah, me too a little bit, but I love it. Oh, have you seen Wicked?
I've seen bits and pieces. I've heard some of the songs. Now, I used to think my mother was the Wicked Witch. That's why I was so scared. I thought
That's
the belt
nice.
And the spatula was coming for me. Now they're gonna listen to this on the TV later.
Right.
It's gonna pop the
right. Crap. The mother used the broom in a different way than the Wicked Witch. While we're on the movie topic, good job with the first ever Tired or Wired there, Bada Booms. We'll do that every Tuesday, so make sure you get prepared for that. We'll do a little Sal Flicks here. I've been watching a ton of movies. Tis the season. And I saw Song Sung Blues. Have you heard of that one?
Oh, I got to see that. That has my boy in it.
Who?
Wolverine.
Yeah, okay, right. So, Kate Hudson, Wolverine.
I'm writing that down, Sal. I got to watch it. I might watch it later.
Now, I wasn't going to see it. Do you know what it's about?
When I see Hugh Jackman, I do whatever I can to watch his
Okay,
films.
But it's not vintage. He was good. He was very good in it. So, it's based on a true story about a Neil Young cover band. And Kate Hudson's his love interest. She's the one who inspires him. True story. Dude, it was so good and almost so unbelievable in certain ways. I highly recommend it. It wasn't the best movie that I've seen. Right now, I'd still go One Battle After Another, Frankenstein, Hamnet was really good. I just saw that one too recently. I thought that was very good.
What's that? Hamlet?
Hamnet.
Who's in that?
I don't know, but it was good. I couldn't tell the actors. So this Song Sung Blues movie, though, I don't know what happened. There was a part. Can I give a spoiler real quick or no?
Yeah. All mezcal's in that movie.
Just put on the earmuffs. There's a part in the movie. So it's based on it's a true story about a Neil Young cover band. There's a part in the movie where, I feel bad giving a spoiler now. I can't hear you, Bada Booms. You shut your mic off.
Yeah, I have you very low right now in my ears, so I was going to just turn it off when...
All right, so spoiler alert real quick.
All right, I'm low.
There's a part in the movie where Eddie Vedder calls Hugh Jackman, the Neil Young, I forget his name in real life, whatever it is, but calls Hugh Jackman to ask him to open for them before a concert in Milwaukee, which is where they became a big thing. And for some reason, you could turn it up now, Bada Booms. You can, spoilers over. Okay. For some reason, I started to cry while watching that. I don't know what the hell is wrong with me, but just like the fact that this guy who's been grinding it out forever finally got a huge break, I couldn't control myself. Like, not like weeping badly, but I was like, what's happening? I'm an emotional person. But I didn't think I would be tearing up during Song Blues. Anyway, it was a good movie. And if you like Hugh Jackman, if you like Kate Hudson, she was terrific in it.
That's kind of like overall, you crying for me, Sal. Like, you know, guy grinding it out, waiting for an opportunity, makes his own.
Right. Right. I'll never forget the first time. Like, the equivalent for you would be like when I first called you, or when we first called. But for me, I'll never forget the first time Eddie Scazzeri called. And I was like, he called my house. My mom's like, oh, it's Eddie Scazzeri. I was like, what? The Eddie Scazzeri? And I knew right then and there that my life would change because that was the internship, the opportunity to get the internship. And then I worked my way up ever since. And here we are doing a podcast after getting
fired. He's hanging up the boots this year too, the great Eddie Scazzeri.
Yes, I know. A couple of things before we get going. Did you get my Bad Bunny joke the other day? Did you get the joke that I posted on?
Oh, about, yeah, you don't speak Spanish, but he's speaking your language?
Did you know what that meant?
Yeah, it was a softball, was it not?
I thought so, but I don't think many people got it. So let me hear you explain what you think that I meant.
So you don't speak Spanish, but he was speaking your language. I thought that's very...
Okay, how? How
like
was
through
he
music, through the ladies dancing on the stage.
There you
like...
go. I mean, it was a clear... You know, I love the whole performance, don't get me wrong, but it was a clear joke about talking about how we may not speak the same language, but we're speaking the same language as it pertains to... The women. I mean, good God. Come on.
That was like Devin Williams in the eighth inning with a two-run lead. I mean,
it
was easy.
I mean, come on, dude. It was a layup, but some people did not get that. And I love the whole performance as I went over yesterday. So much so that I was listening to Bad Bunny all day long. I'm trying to learn the songs, man. I like it. Put me in a good mood. I have no idea what the names are, but I'm trying to learn some of the names of the songs. But
you
I
was listening to
Who?
You ever seen him wrestle?
Oh, yeah, a little bit. A little bit.
Oh, he's great. That match with Damian Priest in Puerto Rico was...
Yeah, Damian Priest is a great dude. We had him in studio, BT. A big Yankee fan, Priest. We should get him on at some point.
Big but Yankee fan. He's a he's a shot caller too, Sal. I don't know if you're familiar with this game.
I am. He's a legit friend with Bad Bunny. Did you see some of the stuff that the Pauls were tweeting? So I guess Jake Paul had some... polarizing tweet, which was anti Bad Bunny performance. And then Logan Paul, who I'm sure I don't know if he's ever crossed paths with Bad Bunny in the ring, but
I don't think he has. But I think they're working an angle. I think that might be what it is.
Maybe. Well, maybe something I was thinking, okay, fair enough. Maybe they're working an angle, but it's, you know, he had to then come out and defend saying, I love my brother, but I think he's wrong for this. Who's working an angle? The Pauls?
I think they're trying to get Jake Paul into it because his boxing career is like whatever it was, it's slowly fading. Because he finally faced real competition and got his ass beat.
So now
he's going to transition into wrestling. And your boy, Triple H, loves Jake Paul. So I don't doubt that he doesn't love... Well, he loves Logan Paul. I don't doubt
that
he doesn't love his brother.
Before we go, I have a confession to make. So remember Nia Long and the stuff that we were talking about the other day?
Mm-hmm.
We met and it was really quick. And then she had to go, whatever. But she did say to meet her son who was there and maybe talking about like, hey, maybe he should get an internship at SNY. And I'm like, yeah, whatever you need. I just ripped my microphone cord out. I go, yeah, whatever you need. Whatever you need. Sure, let's do it. We'll get him an internship, no problem. And then that was it. Like, we left.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really have any way of contacting her. So I followed on Instagram and I DM'd her. I slid in the DMs of Nia Long.
It go down in the DM, Sal. It go down.
And I didn't get a response. Maybe no surprise. But I said, hey, Miss Nia Long, Sal here. We just met. Nice to meet you. If you want to get your son an internship, please let me know. I mean, I had to take a shot, no?
How many followers does she have on Instagram?
What?
How many followers does she have on Instagram?
Over 1 million, I think.
That's never getting seen, brother.
I know, that's what I'm saying. I know, but I had to take my shot.
You remember what I had to do to get to you?
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, well, maybe you could get her attention because you got my attention. Maybe you could somehow get, I know it's going to be more difficult. But
that would take a lot more work.
But she did it. What am I supposed to do? Just let it go and be like, oh, yeah, I thought I was doing the right thing by following up.
No, it's not. You're not wrong, but you're just never going to get a response. You're hopefully optimistic there. It's all right. Just like a Jet fan.
Yeah. All right.
Can we go back to one thing real quick?
Yeah, and then
I wanted to see if you could sing a Wicked song for me. Can I just get a little snippet, a little piece?
My favorite song, and I'm going to eventually do a remake of this. I have the lyrics already going. My favorite song is Popular. Yeah.
Yeah. What do you mean remake?
Yeah, I want to do a remix of it. There's a remix beat of the song Popular. Do you know that song, Popular?
Yeah, I'm familiar.
Are you? Yes or no? Don't
yes,
lie.
Yes, I am.
Okay, it's from the first one.
It.
Yeah. It's from the first one. Yeah.
Can you sing
so
it?
So I love that song. No, I'm not going to sing it. I love it. And it was so inspirational that I want to do a remake. And I already, and that has been going on for a year. I actually got to take the time to sit there and do it. First,
are you
I have
serious?
To get somebody, yeah, first, I have to get somebody to make the beat that is usable. But I have the lyrics that I want to do to make a remake of the song Popular because it was done before by some guys who I love the beat that they use, but I thought the lyrics were awful. So I think I could do it better. Yeah.
So this rap thing is real.
It's not real, but it's, you know.
We're going to put it out there for people?
Yeah. Yeah. If I could get it done, yeah. I mean, I actually have to do it. I'm not going to give empty promises, but it's a goal of mine to record that song, do a remake of it with the beat that those guys use, but just do it with better, more inspirational lyrics.
Why that song? Out of all the songs you could cover or spit over?
Because it's a great, because I like the song. Mm-hmm. And then I think you could tell a great message within that song. And the remix beat that the guy had was great. I'll send it to you.
Trying to be inspirational with it, not like spitting bars.
I mean, the song got my attention. And then I don't know how I was put onto the remake of that song, but then that got my attention. And then I was like, I just started to write stuff down.
So no line from the song? You're not going to give us
no
line? No.
No, I'm not going to give you a line. All right. That does it, Bada Booms. See you later. Good job. We're tired of Wired every Tuesday. That does it for episode whatever on another episode of the Sal Licata Show podcast. We'll be back again tomorrow. Every weekday, new, fresh content. So we'll have a new episode for you again tomorrow. Enjoy the rest of whatever day it is that you're listening to this. We'll see you next time. Bye.